Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ahí va a llegar el gol del Arsenal. Ozil marca. Mesut Ozil,
pasó Guendouzi, Pepe,
Extra.
Hello and welcome to another Arsecast Extra, as always, with James from Gunnerblog. James, goodly morning.
Goodly morning. How you doing?
I'm all right. Were you expecting something a little bit extra there?
I don't know. I a little bit, only because I'd seen people on Twitter demanding it. You know, you've set up this precedent now. I feel like you've created a rod for your own back there.
I think, you know, as much as I enjoyed yesterday, I think we need to be a little bit circumspect. And you keep the special goodly mornings for something that's actually really special. Like, I know us winning a game at last is quite special.
That feels special. It does feel special.
It definitely does. But I don't want to be the guy who just sort of, uses up all his creative juices on a win over Newcastle. I think, you know, if we beat Tottenham or if we beat Man City or if we beat somebody like that, then we can see where the goodly morning takes us. But for now, just a regular goodly morning will suffice.
That's true. There haven't been enough of them. But what about, I mean, a rendition of the Magpie song, given that we beat the Magpies?
That's true. We'll play that at the halftime break. People can have a good dose of the Magpies.
We'll do an updated one. Just give me one moment.
Okay.
Okay.
All right.
Magpies! I really should have thought about this.
Yeah.
Magpies! Magpies at the Emirates, getting nutmegged and losing 4-0. Magpies crying on the bus, going back to Newcastle and being fed seeds by Steve Bruce. There you go. Hours of preparation.
That is good. I think you might have broken your microphone.
I tried to move away from the mic, but it was so powerful, the emotion that came through me.
True.
That I think you're right. It may have shattered all microphones in the surrounding area.
Shattered the diaphragm.
It's lovely, isn't it, to have a proper goodly morning?
It surely is. It's really nice to win a game of football. It's nice to see us score some goals. It's nice to just have that relaxing morning. I came up to write the blog this morning and I was thinking, fuck, it's been ages since I sat down and wrote about, you know, that kind of a win and that comprehensive a win and the various aspects of it. Because when things were going wrong, you're going, okay, well, look, this is what was wrong with this and this is what was wrong with that. And look, if we do this or if we do that, and you've got to ask questions about this, blah, blah, blah. And then you're sitting there going, I get to do it the other way around. Mm-hmm. I get to do it the other way around. I sit here and I go, well, that was good. And that was good. And this was good because that was good. And the benefits of this are, it's much better. I like it a lot more, I have to say, when it works this way, when Arsenal win games and we can examine the football we played, the decisions the manager made from a positive point of view. I know it feels kind of redundant to even say that. But, you know, there are people who go, yeah, well, you know, you live for things being bad. And it's like, well, no, that's not it at all. It's just much better when Arsenal win.
It is. And it's, I mean, you know, as we've said many times this season, there just haven't been enough of those things this season, wins. And to not just any win, but a comprehensive win, you know, by the kind of scoreline we're not massively accustomed to seeing. I don't think we won a game by this margin since Bournemouth last season. I mean, just so welcome and so many different positive things to get to in this show, which is a treat.
Yes, it is. It's a treat for us and hopefully a treat for the people listening as well, because, you know, we're long overdue this kind of a win. I'm trying to remember the last time we won 4-0. When is the last time we won 4-0? Specifically, I know we scored
100 years ago.
I mean, we scored 5 against Bournemouth, didn't we? We scored 4 against Valencia last season. There was a 4-2 against Tottenham, of course, where we scored 4 goals against Spurs. Remember that? Remember how sad they were? That was great.
That was nice as well.
But a 4-0 win.
I like 4-0. It's sort of where it's a proper thrashing, isn't it? Like 3-0.
It's a good win.
It's a comprehensive victory, definitely. But 4 kind of tips the balance for me.
Maybe we'll just have to get on the hotline to Urbino and find out when exactly it was. I'm looking back through the results. There's a 4-0 over Nottingham Forest in the EFL Cup in 2016.
I remember it. 2016?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I was confused. I thought it was
Oh, is there one this season? Am I mental?
Maybe.
Was that 5-0? 4-0 Standard Liège earlier this season. There you go. We are idiots.
Well, they don't count in the Europa League, do they? They don't count in the Europa League.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, look, it was great. And I suppose all the better, really, for the fact that we had to wait quite a long time for those floodgates to open. What did you think about the starting lineup?
I thought it was really interesting. I thought maybe there would be some changes. I did not for one second envisage the changes that Mikel Arteta made. Like Nketiah for Lacazette, that was a surprise to me. Mm-hmm. And Ceballos in midfield ahead of Torreira and Guendouzi, that was also a surprise to me. So, I mean, look, the fact that he did something different isn't really a surprise, because I think he had to. You know, the way things have been going, you can't just sort of keep doing the same thing over and over and over and hope for it to be better. You've got to be a bit more proactive than that. And clearly when he went away and when the team went away to Dubai and had that training and did those extra sessions, he saw some things that he liked from certain individuals and decided to give them a chance on the day. But I thought those two inclusions in particular were surprising. The Nketiah one, perhaps most of all, even if Ceballos has been a bit sidelined of late. You could sort of see a bit more logic to that one, whereas the Nketiah one was a bit surprising. I'm not like being critical of Nketiah at all, but it's still the same situation where you have Aubameyang on the left. He's involved in the build-up play. It's not really his strength. I think there were times in the first half where his touch was heavy. He didn't quite do what you would like a player in that position to do. But the benefit, of course, is that even aside from that, he has the ability to score goals when he starts in that position. But it was a bit of a surprise. What did you make of it?
Oh, I was really surprised. I mean, I had a few conversations with people before the game in the press box about what kind of team they were expecting. Nobody went for anything like that. You know, the discussions were, well, will Saka keep his place? Kolasinac is fit again. You know, will Lacazette keep his place was the discussion, but nobody was thinking that Nketiah would be the one to come in. I think everyone was looking at Martinelli probably as the guy who'd likely do that. It was sort of between, I don't know, and would Pepe start? Nketiah really, really surprised me. But then I suppose, well, number one, we know that Arteta's been incredibly positive about his performances in training. But I also think having made the decision to bring him back from loan and to keep him at the club, I do wonder if there's a slight sense of, well, we have to give him some game time in order to sort of justify that decision to the player who really wanted to go out on loan at the start of this season and knew that that game time would be beneficial. But I also had a slight thought in my mind of, you know, Arsenal coming back off a 2-week break, they've got 3 games in 7 days. One of those is a pretty important one in Europe.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was like, are these changes rotational as well as being about sending a message and, you know, just choosing the most informed player?
Yeah, I guess that does make some sense. You know, I think there was an element of, I don't think it's, you don't pick a team simply to send a message. You pick a team to win a game, right? And he picked a team that he thought could win the game. It turned out he was right. You know, the first half, I'm sure we'll talk about in a bit more detail, wasn't particularly great, but it did come into life. I do also think there was an element of, how do you, if you step back from picking a team to win a game, how do you manage a football club, a football team? You have to make decisions which kind of resonate a bit. You have to make decisions which are going to have an impact on your team, not just for that game, but maybe going forward. So I think maybe there was just a little message in the selection of Nketiah in that it's a sign that, okay, Lacazette hasn't scored. I don't think Lacazette could be too surprised to have found himself dropped or on the bench, right? But at the same time, I think there was something in it to say to the rest of the players, if you work hard, if you train hard, if you impress me in training, you will get a chance. I think there was I think there was something to that. And I
agree. I think that that's been one of the hallmarks of Arteta in this first couple of months, is that he's been firm but fair. And I think even the selection of Ceballos, I mean, I think there was a tactical component, because no team in the Premier League has less possession of the ball than Newcastle. I think they're 20th on that metric. So you know you're going to have plenty of the ball. And having a guy who is a bit more progressive, a bit more creative, makes a certain degree of sense. But I also think that he was kind of saying, well, look, if you work hard, the door is always open, in the same way that it was for Xhaka, in the same way it has been for Mustafi. Now it is for Ceballos. And, you know, he sets these quite high standards. But if you do change and if you do meet them, you will be rewarded.
Yeah. Yeah. So, look, I think it's brave as well. It is brave, isn't it, to give a guy his first Premier League start ahead of Lacazette, who's an experienced international, ahead of Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who's our leading scorer and best striker, to give him his first Premier League start in a game you know you need to win. I think there's an element of bravery in that decision-making. So... look, we want a manager who will take some risks and do the right things. Finding the balance between that is something Arteta's got to deal with. I know there was an omission from the squad, but I think we'll deal with the Guendouzi thing in part two. We'll have a question about that, so we can leave that to one side. What about the first half in general? How did you think we performed? It did take us a while to get going.
Yes, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because I think in the fullness of the 90 minutes, you know, you look at those selections and you think that's absolutely fair enough, and it all panned out quite well. At half time, my sense was, although I didn't think Ceballos or Nketiah had done much wrong as individuals, I did feel like maybe... I did feel like adding them in had sort of reduced a little of the connectivity of the team in the first half, because... Nketiah against a mass defence in a low block sort of wasn't, for my money, as good as Lacazette can be at making it stick or keeping it in play. And I just felt that the progression of the ball through the team wasn't that great. I was also struck by, for the first time in a while, Arsenal looked vulnerable on the counter-attack. And that was so often the case under Unai Emery, but has been a bit less so under Mikel Arteta. But I felt like when Newcastle broke... they threatened, and they probably ought to have made slightly more of some of the opportunities they had.
Right. Well, look, they were dangerous, I think, at times. And I do think there was an element of us trying to get going and trying to find our rhythm in that first period.
I mean, we our first shot on target was after about half an hour. You know, it was that one where Aubameyang went through.
Left-footed shot.
Yeah. And actually, that was a pass from Mesut Ozil after a lovely shimmy in the centre circle. And my sense of that first half was... Arsenal only really started to get moving once Ozil clicked into gear, and I thought he played quite an important role in sort of, you know, just getting the gears going.
I think so. In some ways, I think he kind of set the tone for the second half with what he did in the last part of the first half, because we had struggled. Newcastle were very good, I think, defensively. You looked around the pitch. I remember looking a couple of times at Saka picking up the ball on the left-hand side with literally nobody anywhere near him, or if not anywhere near him, nobody open. You know, there was no space for us to find passes between the Newcastle line. So they were very good and very well organized.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. So, you know, they squeezed us well. They made the game very compact. We couldn't find our way through midfield. But what we started to do was use the wings a bit more and stretch the play a bit more. I thought Ceballos was quite important in that he picked the ball and he'd bypass somebody in midfield or perhaps one of the centre halves and move the ball straight out to Bellerin, who he connected with quite a lot. The two of them played a lot of passes to each other. So we shifted that left-sided bias that we have to an extent. But I think Ozil, in the last 15 minutes, I think we'd say that the second half was far superior from an Arsenal point of view in terms of creativity and what we did. But in those last 10, 15 minutes of the first half, I think Ozil found space, made runs, made passes, which gave us perhaps just a little bit of a building block for that second period.
Yeah, I think that's true. And, you know, Mikel Arteta was on the sideline talking to Saka and Aubameyang, as he always does. And you could see he was trying to get Aubameyang closer to Nketiah. And that's a change that they actually did make at halftime. Aubameyang spoke about it on Sky afterwards. But, you know, Aubameyang in the second half started playing within the width of the penalty box a bit more.
That was funny. Did you see that interview on Sky
with Jamie Redknapp? Yeah.
And there was like, I took a screenshot of it, and there's a sort of, Aubameyang has this look on his face like, I can't believe I have to talk to this guy. I just can't believe it. And Redknapp asked him a question after he talked to Saka, and he asked Aubameyang a question, something along the lines of, you know, what happened at halftime? Did the manager do anything specific, or was it whatever it was? Mm. And Aubameyang's answer was like, we worked a bit harder and we just keep going. Was it a case, did he do something different, or was it just keep going? And Aubameyang said, yeah, we just keep going. You know, we kept going, put a bit more energy in. We got the first goal, then the second goal, and then and then he just stopped. Like, he couldn't be arsed talking to Jamie Redknapp anymore. And I loved him a little bit more for that.
Yeah, I mean, he's no time for a lot of the media stuff, and I don't really blame him, to be honest. He's focused on scoring goals. But yeah, I also really like, there was a great moment when the Saka nutmeg, which we'll get to, is shown in that interview.
Yeah.
He sort of makes a noise, an exhalation, like a whoo thing, and they have a good chuckle about that.
Yeah, that was good. That was good. So let's get to the second half then. And
yeah, I was surprised no changes, actually. I just thought,
I wasn't.
Maybe.
No.
Were you not? You thought he'd stick with it?
I wasn't. I think he's kind of got the courage of his convictions in his players to do what he wants them to do, even if the execution isn't quite right in the first half. I think he's not... I don't think it was so poor that we had to go, uh-oh, we better change something here, and that comes with personnel. I think we saw with the Leeds game that he is capable of getting more from his players in the second period, perhaps by a little tweaking of what he wants them to do, a little bit more, you know, analysis of what the opposition are doing. I think we have to take that into account as well, that, you know, he's looked at what Newcastle have done in that first half and maybe said, look, let's do this, let's try this. Maybe an element of, I'm not sure, the hairdryer, that was certainly a part of the Leeds performance. But you know, I think he's capable of reacting to what he's seen in that first half and getting more from his players. So I wasn't surprised there were no changes.
Yeah, that makes sense, to be fair. I think I thought that Nketiah might be kind of a sacrificial lamb, but I think that might be a bit of a hangover in my mind from the Unai Emery era, where those half-time changes were unusually regular. But you're right, Arteta has been able to provoke turnarounds in games without making substitutions. And I really did think that, you're right, they improved towards the end of the first half, but there was just a different energy and zip about Arsenal as soon as the second half started. And
that was a word that Saka used and Aubameyang used. Maybe you just picked up on Saka, but Saka said, yeah, we put more energy into it. I don't think they could handle us. So yeah. I'm guessing that was part of the instruction from Arteta. Let's talk Nicolas Pepe, because I think this was his best game for Arsenal. I think coming so soon after the Burnley game, where he didn't start and he didn't get on, people were asking a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. And it's right, it's understandable and reasonable to ask questions about a £72 million signing who doesn't get on the pitch in a game where you're looking for a goal and you're looking for a win. I don't think it's unreasonable to ask questions about that. He got a goal. He got two assists. Those are very tangible contributions, but I think what was also noticeable about Pepe yesterday was a willingness to get back, to track back, to tackle, to cover Bellerin, because he had to at times, because that guy, Saint-Maximin, is just absurdly fast. It's ridiculous. It's like he's like, do you remember in FIFA, you used to be able to, was it FIFA or Pro Evo, where you could like make a player and you could give him the stats that you wanted. So you give him like 100 pace or whatever it might be. He's like that. He's like a cheap player when it comes to pace. But I thought overall what we saw from Nicolas Pepe was exactly the kind of performance that Mikel Arteta would have wanted to see from a player, having said some of the things that he said about him in terms of his training, his application, his positional conscientiousness, and also what he can give us in the final third. And what he gave us in the final third was absolutely key to us winning that game.
Yeah, I thought he was excellent. I thought he was really excellent. And, you know, you mentioned the defensive work. I think he led the team for ball recoveries. I think he had something like 12 ball recoveries in the course of the game,
wow,
which is a real outlier for him, an unusual performance in that respect. You know, the Burnley thing, a lot of noise was made about that. And I myself was kind of concerned and frustrated that he hadn't got on. I think with a bit more distance, you know, you look at it and you have to remind yourself, well, you know, he was robbed of a substitution by an injury in that game. He probably didn't have the three changes that he wanted, Arteta. Nevertheless, you know, he's clearly brought Pepe back into the team. He's been impressed enough with what he's done. And I thought he was excellent. I mean, the thing about Pepe is very few people doubt his talent. You know, I don't see too many Arsenal fans who watch him regularly saying, this guy isn't talented. This guy's not good enough. It's more a question of it not happening, you know, and it not quite clicking for him. But I don't think anyone questions his ability. And we saw plenty of that yesterday. And one of the things I noticed was Arteta, at one point in the game, just shouted to him, Nico, simple. And I think that's what he wants from him. Mm. You know, he's brilliant at the complicated things, beating two, three men or working in a confined space. But I think Arteta will be most satisfied when he adds a bit of simplicity to his game. Mm. And I thought he did the simple things well yesterday. And that's not always the easiest part of the game.
I mean, there was a moment, I think, in the second half on Sky when he lost the ball in midfield and Newcastle went up the other end. I think we dealt with it, but Alan Smith on the commentary was going, Mikel Arteta is going crazy. And Nicolas Pepe, he kind of ran into two guys. I think you're going to get that with him. There is going to be that element of, okay, can he do the simple thing or is the more difficult thing there to do? Oh, fuck it, I'll give it a go. I think that's part of who he is. I don't think you're going to eradicate that completely from his game, and I don't think you should either, because it's part of his personality as a footballer. But I think overall, Arteta will be delighted with what he got from Pepe. You know, the numbers, ultimately, you know, when it comes to attacking players, you are judged by numbers. We can all watch with our eyes and we can talk about Ozil, Lacazette and their contribution as well, but you know, to come out of a game with the numbers that he did, with the goal, with the two assists, with the ball recoveries, you know, it was a big performance from him in a game where we needed someone to produce something like that. And people might say, well, it's just Newcastle at home, but you know what, we've had loads of home games against loads of teams this season and nobody's done that on a regular basis anyway. So let's not be dismissive of it when he finally produces a big performance like that.
Yeah, in the first half, you know, the space was not there for him quite as much. And I saw a brilliant tweet, and you have to forgive me because I can't remember who it was by, but somebody said, I'm just imagining how good Pepe would be if he was playing against this Arsenal team. And I kind of get that, because I still think that when he's going to be at his absolute best is when we can release him quickly and early into big space. I think that's where he's going to absolutely flourish. But he did a sort of different job yesterday, and I thought he did it exceptionally well. Yeah, he was great. And he created, I think, the first big chance of the second half, which was for Eddie Nketiah, if I remember right.
Yeah, a little bit unlucky there. You know, he had to move backwards to take the shot, and it clipped the top of the bar. You know, what a big goal that would have been for him and for Arteta as well. I think, you know, would really have justified that selection. But, you know, those are moments, and I think Aubameyang showed why he is the amazing goal scorer that he is. I mean, that was a Giroud goal. That was an Olivier Giroud header from Aubameyang.
It's a really good header, because Pepe's cross is decent, but it's not a cross...
it's floated rather than driven.
He has to generate all the power, you know, and he does do that. I mean, it still has some of the Aubameyang trademarks in terms of as Pepe strikes the ball, literally as he strikes it, Aubameyang sets off on his sprint and he gets 3 yards ahead of the right wing back. And he never catches him, unsurprisingly. And it's just a really, really good planted downward header. And how many times have Arsenal been in a position where you've thought they need something here to help them break the deadlock, get through, and it's Aubameyang who comes through. I mean, he's just a phenomenon in the penalty box, really.
He is. Then we got the second goal. What more can we say about Bukayo Saka that hasn't already been said this season? I think, you know, there's been so much promise from Martinelli. There's been so much from Joe Willock. Reece Nelson has improved. You know, we have a clutch of young players coming through who are really, really exciting. But an 18-year-old playing, I'm not going to say out of position anymore, because it's clearly a position in which he can play and play very well. So I think it's wrong to say that he's playing out of position. But he was selected over a much more experienced and a more natural left back in Say Kolasinac, who was fit again but left on the bench. I think that was justification for the performances that Saka has put in until now. He's sort of the incumbent. He should keep his place until such time as he doesn't deserve it, I think, in the current setup. And that setup might change in the future. I'm sure that's something we'll talk about. But, you know, the confidence, the ability, the composure, you know, to nutmeg a guy like that going into the box at 18 years of age, and then to look up, and he spoke about it on Sky, didn't he? He said he was going to look for Eddie first, is what he said, but realized he would have to play it, you know, across the box, and chances are that ball would have been cut out. But he saw Pepe, you know, makes the run. The finish is good. I think it looks a bit more bumbly than it actually is, because it's one of those that makes it more difficult for the goalkeeper, even if he goes the right way, because of the way he hits the ball. I think it just makes it a bit more difficult for him. But just fantastic play from Saka. And I think for me, the fact that it's not that people didn't know him or didn't rate him or what have you, but the way he's broken through this season has just been one of the best things about it.
Yeah, I think Arteta said after the game he has the courage to play like a senior player, to make things happen. And that's so right. There's no sense of conservatism. He's never in his shell, really. He never seems particularly awed by the environment and the surroundings. He just looks like he was absolutely made to play for Arsenal. And yeah, I thought he was excellent again. The piece of skill he produces in this game is so audacious and such an indication of that confidence. But, you know, lots of players might do that, but then not have the presence of mind to pick out the right pass. And I think that shows the maturity that's in his game as well. I think he's doing an incredible job in this adapted left-back role. And, it was a brilliant piece of play. And the goal reminded me quite of Pepe's goal against United.
Yeah.
It's a similar kind of run from him into the central areas. And as a team lacking in goals, we need him to do that. You know, we need him to get on the end of some stuff, because we need those contributions.
For sure. I think after we were 2-0 up and you score two goals that quickly, it took a little bit of the wind out of Newcastle's sails. They tried to put some wind back in with a couple of substitutions who ran around a bit and tried to press us. I think there was one moment where where they had some danger. And I do, you know, not that sometimes you need just a little bit of luck, and the width of a post prevented Newcastle from making it 2-1. And at 2-1,
the man again, wasn't it? Yeah.
And you just wonder what it would have been like at 2-1, because it probably would have been a bit nervy. And I think some of the jitters that we have, which are still not quite out of our system, would have been present again. But look, that's the way it goes. Sometimes you get the luck that goes for you, sometimes it goes against you, and we had a bit of luck that goes that went for us. So, you know, I think after that, what I liked was some changes which made sense. The Torreira for Ceballos, who was very good, just to provide a bit of energy, a bit of buzz around midfield, a bit more protection. We had Lacazette come on for Nketiah. And we kept the ball. We kept the ball really, really well. We were comfortable. We realized that the best way to prevent danger was to make sure that they didn't have it. And I thought we looked very comfortable keeping possession. And that's not something we've always done. There's been an element of panic to the way that we play, even with a couple of goals lead. So that was very pleasing. And then, of course, the third and fourth goals were the icing on the cake.
Yeah, they were. And the third goal, I mean, the numbers are great, aren't they? 11 players touch the ball, 30-odd passes, isn't it?
Yeah.
A really good move. And actually, I thought as the move accelerated into the final third, there was some really good play. Ozil himself kind of drove forward.
It was a lovely pass from Xhaka into Ozil's path, because it sort of bypassed, you know, their midfield who were trying to press up. So it was a good pass and nicely weighted pass into Ozil, who drove on then. And
I thought and Lacazette did well, I thought, inside the penalty box to turn it on. I mean, the only part of the goal that slightly let it down was the finish, really. But I think, given Ozil's goal scoring trouble this season, and we'll say the same for Lacazette, I'm sure, you know, any kind of finish will do at the moment.
For sure. I mean, I was a bit disappointed that he didn't do the bounce it into the ground thing and what have you, but
sure.
There you go.
Yeah, look, I mean, we got a bit fortunate. Dubravka should probably keep that out. I think he's as surprised as anyone else that the effort is as tame as it is. But it was a really well-worked goal and, you know, a sign that things maybe are clicking a little bit. I think Arteta will have been really pleased with that, because you imagine, from a sort of front-to-back perspective, that is the kind of football he would like to play.
Yeah, I think of all the goals that we scored, he'll be most happy with that one, because of it sort of stems from what you might call the Arsenal tradition, you know, possession football and then seeing a chance and having the ability and the efficiency to create something when you turn the team around. Lovely pass from Joe Willock to Pepe to create the goal for Lacazette. Again, one of those moments where perhaps he got a little bit of luck with the finish. He kicked it off his own foot, and I think it wrong-footed the goalkeeper. But the celebration, you can see how much that goal meant to him. And I think, you know, on a day when we've won, you know, to have that little bit of extra bonus good juice is when Ozil scores having not scored for ages and Lacazette scores having not scored for ages. You know, we need those players to contribute between now and May. So the fact that they've kind of lifted the burden a bit from themselves is very positive.
Yeah, I think you're right to highlight the pass from Willock. I think, you know, he's a player that we talk about him lacking consistency.
It's a pre-assist, James.
Sure, and pre-assist. But I think his last few run-outs, including the start at Bournemouth in the FA Cup, have been pretty good, actually. And I think he's in a decent little patch for him. So let's hope he can maintain that. Pepe, again, does well. I honestly didn't realise in real time that Lacazette had mishit it quite as badly as he did. I mean, it comes off his standing foot in a big, big way. But there's a great moment as he sort of strikes it. He's on the turn, and as his face turns back towards the camera, you can see the delight already etched across it. And he plays it quite cool, Lacazette, at times, doesn't he? But he couldn't, I think.
I was waiting for he plays it quite cool. I was going, what? Did you watch those celebrations? I should have waited for you to finish your sentence, of course.
But you know what I mean? Like, often he'll go for like the... It was he who famously did the sort of just no celebration, you know, just stood there. And he can be, you know, quite... have a demeanour to him. But that was all evaporated yesterday. He was just lost in it. And I really love those scenes. You know, I think Arteta, one of the big things he's done, we've talked about the tactical side, but he's tried to improve the spirit in the group. It was what shocked him when he arrived with Manchester City and they walked all over us at the Emirates Stadium. He didn't see that fight. He didn't see that collective spirit. And in that moment, it was there. I mean, maybe this little winter break has helped with that too, a bit of togetherness.
Yeah, for sure. And you could see the team really enjoyed the goal as much as Lacazette enjoyed the goal. So, you know, from that point of view, you know, it's a heavy burden to carry when you're a striker and when you've been the main striker for X amount of games and you haven't scored and you know you're being criticised for it, and understandably so, that's your job. You know, he wouldn't be blind to that, but, you know, to get that goal. I always remember, I think it was, could have been a goal that started our 49-game run. And sometimes you just need something to go your way for the rest of it to click. And it could have been against Everton, and it could have been Sylvain Wiltord who scored the goal. And it was just one of these that he hit the ball, it either hit a defender and just looped up crazily over the goalkeeper and in. And I think that broke a little duck for him or for us or whatever it was. But, you know, sometimes you just need some shit to go your way. And from Lacazette's point of view, not much or not enough has gone his way, and some of that is on him, but, you know, just to sort of get rid of that millstone around his neck, let's hope he can kick on from here, because as you say, we've got a big game on Thursday, big game on Sunday, and there's a lot still to play for this season because of perhaps other things that have gone on, which we can talk about in part two.
Yeah, I just was having a quick look for that Wiltord goal. I think the one you mean, it was February 2002. I guess it helped propel us towards the title. The headline on BBC Sports, Arsenal keep title hopes alive with a hard-fought victory over Everton thanks to a fortunate Sylvain Wiltord goal.
There you go.
It was sort of an outstretched volley that looked like a cross that ended up dropping into the net. So, yeah, I mean, look, it was fortunate for Lacazette, but he probably was due a bit of luck in front of goal, and look, he got it. So it was just great, and really great scenes at full time as well. I mean, you know, these are small things, but they're things that as fans at the Emirates Stadium, particularly those who turn up and come in all conditions, how we haven't had too many moments like that with all the players on the pitch, you know, embracing, high-fiving, going to every corner of the ground. That's a big part of going to live football, enjoying that. And yeah, it was a delight to see.
Yeah, it's kind of that that thing where, that circular thing, isn't it? Where Wenger always said, like, it's the job of the team to get the fans up or whatever it might be, right?
Sure, sure.
And that's true. I think it is. You know, fans will react to performances. But I think fans can also, they can help, and they can, if you can create that, and that was something Arteta talked about, is reconnecting the fans and the team. But it can only happen if there's an element of belief in the team, right?
Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? So, like, if we're not playing that well, but the fans believe that the team are capable of turning it around, I think it helps maintain a better atmosphere. And I don't mean to open up this whole fans as cheerleaders debate or anything else, but I'm just sort of what you're saying rings very true to me, that after a very difficult time, if fans can start believing in the team again, and if the team can connect with the fans, I just think it will make the atmosphere and it'll make everything much more positive. And from there, hopefully we can see the benefits of that in certain games or certain situations, which maybe don't quite go to plan, or maybe something doesn't go as well as it should go. People don't absolutely lose their shit the way that you know, has happened in the past.
I think that's true. It's obviously a reciprocal relationship and they each feed into each other. And the other thing is that winning is a habit, and it is a habit that Arsenal have lost. And I think just winning in that comprehensive manner, experiencing that, remembering what the prize is, remembering what the reason we love to go or we love to watch and they love to do this for their job, remembering those feelings and reconnecting with them, I just think that will help. I mean, who knows, maybe I'm daring to be optimistic, but I think it's about time, because, you know, it's been a bit of a nightmare season, and it was a really good day.
So, I mean, look, it didn't change our league position any. We remain in 10th. No. However, we are now just 6 points off 5th, which could be a very, very important position to finish in. We'll talk about that in the second half of the show, because I've got some questions about that. But overall, I think we can say that it was a really positive day yesterday. You know, all the players beforehand were talking about how great things were and how happier they are and how much more positive they feel about what's going on at Arsenal and the work that they're doing on the training ground, et cetera, et cetera. I think we had to win yesterday, not just because we had to win because it's a Premier League game, but because of everything that they'd said. If we'd gone out and just struggled our way to another draw, that belief that we've just spoken about, people would be going, hang on a minute. You know, you're not backing up what you're saying with what you're doing on the pitch. And even though it took us a half maybe to get going, we did that yesterday. And I think that's a very important thing, that the pressure that they must have realized they were under to produce, having said all the things that they said and having to deal with the team and the situation that it's in, they did it. They did it. And, you know, it's great and we love it, but let's go on and win the next game. But that was a really interesting thing Arteta said, wasn't it? What he said about the next game: I want it to be better. I want us to improve. So there's no resting on any laurels here. As much as we can enjoy it as fans, those players are going to be like whipped into shape for the next game.
Yeah, I think so. And he wants progress. He doesn't want a case of one step forward, two steps back. And it's been like that for much of the last couple of years at Arsenal. So yeah, I think it was really, really encouraging. And I think the way the players are responding to the criteria Arteta is setting them and the demands that he's making is hugely encouraging. I think the way someone like Lacazette responded to being left out of the team bodes well. I think you could say the same for the way Pepe responded to being left out of the team, the way, there are more, Ceballos, others, Mustafi. And there might be more players that we'll get on to in part two who might respond in similar fashion. So the direction feels good. And I think many Arsenal fans felt that the direction was good, even though the results weren't great, but there's only so long that's sustainable. So thankfully we've got a result.
Exactly. There's a bit of justification for feeling like that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Cool. Well, look, we will take a break because there's plenty more to get through. Lots of issues and lots of things going on. We'll deal with them in part two right after this.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently: Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show that... I know what I'm talking about. Let me do it again. Welcome back to the Arscast Extra. This is part two of the show where we answer the questions that you send to us on Twitter at GunnarBlog and at ArsBlog, on the ArsBlog Facebook page, facebook.com/TheArsBlog, and on the ArsBlog Discord chat server, which you get access to if you are an ArsBlog member on Patreon. Just before we get on with the questions, I like this one from Ryan. It's not even a question. He's at Brace Ryan, and he says, "Ha ha, stupid magpies." So there you go.
Yeah, Yeah, good to vanquish the Magpies at long last.
Yeah.
Did you have a question lined up about our friend Matteo Guendouzi?
I did have a question lined up about our friend Matteo Guendouzi. It comes from Ashley Moss, who's at Ashley Moss 4, who says, what do you make of Matteo Guendouzi not even being in the squad yesterday? And afterwards, Mikel Arteta had some quotes when he was asked why Guendouzi was not in the squad, and he said...
He's been a naughty boy.
He's been a very naughty boy. He's got to go think about what he's done and sort his behaviour out. He said, the reason is that players, in my opinion, who are playing better, behaving better, dun, 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 and are more applied to deliver on the pitch what we want, are the players selected. So...
And subsequently, we have, I mean, as we've been talking, there's been a story from Sam Dean at The Telegraph saying that Matteo Guendouzi was left out after a row at the Dubai training camp that started in the training session and continued into the hotel. Funnily enough, I've just had a text from my brother, who's not even an Arsenal fan, just flashed up on my phone as I was reading that, saying, go on, Arteta. I think, you know, he doesn't mess around, does he? He won't take any shit, basically.
No, I don't think he will. And I like it. I like that. You know, I think you need that. You need to be a manager capable of instilling discipline in a team. Like, I don't want to, again, always hark back to what came before, but I don't think Unai Emery was a guy who could instill discipline in the team. Not from a footballing point of view, and not from a general disciplinarian point of view, because he tried it and then rode back on it, and everyone went, soft touch. It's like a teacher. You know, you have a teacher who can't control a classroom? That was Emery. Whereas I think Arteta is the teacher when everyone's like racketing around before the class and the teacher walks in. Did you ever have one of those teachers where he just walks in the room and everyone goes,
Just
silence descends upon the room and everyone sits down and waits for the class to begin.
That's serious authority if you can command that.
I mean, look, just on the basis of what we talked about beforehand and Dubai and warm weather training and togetherness and you know, the squad being united and all that kind of stuff, it's a bit disappointing, I suppose, to hear that one of the members of the squad who, you know, I'm not saying at 20 years of age you have to be... supplicant. Is that the right word? I don't know. Like, you're allowed to have a personality and you're allowed to be a part of the squad, but you're still very young. I mean, we don't know what the row was about. We don't know.
Well, he was very young at Lorient and he was a bit like this there, to be honest, from what you hear. So, you know, he is someone who has got a combustible personality and that's part of his makeup. And you know, that is also what plays into a lot of the things we like about Guendouzi, I suspect. You know, that bravado and that niggle and that needle. But
self-confidence as well, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. But that has to be contained and confined, and nobody comes before the head coach, you know, and Arteta will lay down that law. And I guess what's encouraging for Guendouzi is we know that he'll also... forgive and forget and bring people back in if they play by his rules. You know, there's plenty of precedent for that. But it's an intriguing one because Guendouzi started, didn't he, at Burnley?
Yeah.
And you thought, oh, here we go. This might be the start of him coming to the side. Clearly something's gone a bit wrong since then. I can't say I know what this row's about, but I'm intrigued. I mean, do you think it's... big bad news for Guendouzi? Is it like, and you're out the door, or do you think it's more of a sort of, you know, what do they say, like a rap on the knuckles kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, look, it depends. You know, we can't say on the one hand that we've got all this football to play and then sort of, you know, wipe out one member of the squad who would be a useful member, you know, somebody to have. Look, it depends how serious this bust-up was. If it is just something, you know, stuff happens on the training ground all the time. Like, all the time. between players. You know, emotions are high. The testosterone is up. You know, things are said, things are done on the training ground. You know, players have their bust ups and they say things to coaches, and you know, usually they're sorted out. I suppose the slightly worrying aspect of this is that the row continued in the hotel afterwards, where it shouldn't have. And that's, you know, what happens on the training pitch, et cetera, et cetera. But the fact that it happened in the hotel too, maybe that's Guendouzi not being prepared to accept whatever discipline Arteta is trying to put in place, or whatever rule he felt he might have been in breach of. You know, it depends. It feels probably like a rap on the knuckles kind of thing. And I don't think it's unusual for a player of 20 years of age to need that from time to time. And, you know, when you think about what Guendouzi has done since he's arrived at Arsenal, you know, he arrived that summer. Nobody knew who he was. Nobody expected him to start the first Premier League game of the season. Nobody expected him to be a fixture in the team throughout that season. You know, when he's been fit, he's been in the team, or at the very least in the squad. You know, there have been times when he's been benched. I just wonder maybe if at 20 years of age, you need to be reminded that you haven't made it. You know, you've done very well to make yourself a first team player at Arsenal, having made a big step up, but don't take anything for granted. Don't get ahead of yourself. Don't let your ego get in the way of the next 10 years of your career, right? And like you said, I don't think Arteta will be slow to remind any player of that, whether they're 20 years of age or 30 years of age. So we'll wait and see. Obviously, what happens on Thursday, if he's in the squad on Thursday, then it's a lesson that Arteta believes he will learn from. So we'll see. We'll see. It is a bit worrying, though, isn't it, when you hear of stuff like that? But
yeah, but you
things
know,
blow over quickly, don't they?
Yeah, and what's a bust up? Do you know what I mean? Like a bust up. I've had plenty of bust ups in my life, and that can just be tense word or.
It's verbal.
You know what I mean?
Unless something got physical, which would be crazy.
I don't think that's
got
to
be verbal. Yeah,
and you know those things happen at training grounds all the time. But what's good to know is there is a bit of discipline being enforced, and maybe it will serve as a reminder to Guendouzi that he hasn't made it yet. I mean, the other thing that it made me think about is that he's not the only fully fit player who didn't make that match day squad. You know, you've got, Rob Holding, if you count him as fully fit, Reece Nelson, Ainsley Maitland-Niles. These guys were all deemed fit and available for selection, didn't make the 18, which I think shows the squad's in decent-ish shape in terms of fitness at the moment.
Yeah.
But also shows that this is going to happen. I mean, guys are going to miss games if everyone stays fit.
That's the reality of having a big squad and almost everybody in it who's fit. And let's remember as well that Kieran Tierney is not
fit.
He's on the way back.
The two signings are almost back.
Pablo Mari and Cedric are coming into the squad. So there are going to be players who are going to be disappointed week in, week out. And Arteta's got to make the decisions. And in a situation like this, if he decides that Guendouzi shouldn't be in the squad because of the way he's trained, or because of, or even simply because somebody else is better suited to that game or has worked harder and worked better, you know, a place in the team based on your reputation is part of why we were in the problem position that we were, you know. Make it competitive. Make them work hard. If you don't follow the rules, pay the consequences. Simple as that. So I've got no problem with Guendouzi being left out of the team. I think he's a player who has been very good for us at times, who's also been a player who looks like, to me, someone who could use a little bit of a reminder that it's not easy. Or it shouldn't be easy, and you shouldn't take anything for granted. So if he comes back from this, if he learns a lesson and it works out well, then all the better for us.
Yeah, it's not going to make him a worse player, is it? So the manner in which he responds to this little setback could be really important to him. Now, we've had a lot of different sort of questions and messages about what's going on with Man City. I quite like this one on Discord from the 13th Aristocrat. Not a question, but part of me is secretly hoping that Wenger had some part to play in City's Champions League ban. He did start working for FIFA recently.
Yeah, but it's UEFA who implemented the ban, so it's nuts.
Sad. And I should have known that, to be honest. And then Gun Ranjan said, what do you think of Arteta's comments about Man City? It bothered me that it looked like he thought some kind of injustice was being done. What City had done is completely unethical, and if anything, clubs like them, PSG, should be brought to justice sooner rather than later. What have you made of the whole PSG fallout and Arteta's response?
I like that, PSG fallout. I like it.
Yeah.
The City fallout. we had a couple of questions. Also from the Discord, Henry Powell said that, what's your opinion on Man City's Champions League ban and what does this mean for Arsenal? So we can discuss it from the Arsenal perspective in a moment. Arteta's response, well, I think it's, would it not be natural to be disappointed for a club at which you recently worked and had a great time and you respect the coach and you a lot of success there?
We want the big job eventually.
Yeah.
That sort of thing.
Arsenal is a stepping stone, you know. No, yeah. I mean, look, I think that's natural. We don't have, as fans, mixed loyalties in any way. No. You know,
it's completely subjective to us. You know, we are biased. That's it.
Exactly. End of story. Whereas Arteta probably has, you know, really nice feelings towards Man City because he had a good time there and enjoyed his work there. And it's helped him get this job at Arsenal, which he clearly is relishing. He probably has very warm feelings for Everton, having spent so much time there as a player. Mm. You know, there'll be Celtic fans who probably won't like the fact that Mikel Arteta will have warm feelings towards Rangers because he played there, etc., etc. So, you know, those things are natural. I also think there is an element of, with players and with managers, that they, I don't want to say they close their eyes to certain things, right? But they see what they do as a job. And their job is to play well for their team, or it's to manage the team as well as possible. I mean, you could ask all the questions in the world about Man City and their money and where it comes from. And let me be clear, I think it's been fairly well documented that they've broken the rules and therefore they should be punished. I'm not saying that they shouldn't be punished at all. I think it's right that they should be punished. And I think, as I wrote over the weekend, this idea that the rich and the powerful shouldn't be face the consequences of their actions simply because they're rich and powerful is something every right-thinking person should be against. Mm-hmm. At every level, whether it's sporting, political, societal, you know, you should not be able to get away with things that break the rules or break the laws just because you're rich and you can afford good legal representation. That is not just in any way. So if City have been deemed guilty of offences, they should pay the price for them.
Mm-hmm.
But
I agree with you.
You know, I think from their point of view, they're going, well, I'm doing a job and, you know, who owns the club is not really relevant to me, whatever it is. And you can, you know, that cognitive dissonance that they have, that we have as fans, right? You know, you can be as snitty as you want about Man City and their money and where it comes from, and I understand it completely. And you can talk about Abu Dhabi and human rights, but we're sponsored by Emirates. So, you know, how fucking high is your horse, right? And I think with Arteta, he's not going to say or make it out, well, you know, they got what they deserved by the way they operated. That's what these rich nation states will, you know, I just don't think it's realistic. I think he's just looking at it from a sporting perspective. It's happened to a club at which he has a connection, and that's it, you know? And you could say maybe he should talk about that. Maybe Pep Guardiola should talk about that. Maybe Pep Guardiola should apply the same level of morality to, let's say, human rights abuses in Abu Dhabi as he does to, you know, Catalan independence and the behavior of police in Spain and all those kind of things. You know, he seems to be stronger on one side of it than the other side of it. I don't know if that's realistic either, you know?
No, I think ultimately, I mean, like you say, it's cognitive dissonance. If you're taking money from an organisation, if they're paying your wages and a very healthy wage at that, I think you kind of don't want to query that too much. It's kind of a natural human instinct. I mean, personally, I agree with you. It's absolutely right that they should be punished for what appears to be a pretty flagrant breaking of the rules. I have my own queries about the rules because I think that FFP is designed as much to protect the rich clubs and keep other clubs out as anything else. I mean, I think that's the principal driver of FFP is the idea that, well, we don't want any more Man City's and Chelsea's coming into our little European Super League gang. Because ultimately it's applied at a level of the game where the clubs are going to be fine. It's not applied at the grassroots of the game where the financial management of clubs is actually a serious issue. However, they have known the rules and they have broken them. So I hope this ban is upheld because it would be a show of strength, wouldn't it, from UEFA, who have been a bit flaky, let's say, when things have gone to Court of Arbitration for Sport, etc.
Well, sure. I mean, that's a separate entity, though, isn't it? I mean, that's where
they go. Sure, sure. It's not them being flaky, but
yeah, I know what you mean.
To enforce is what I mean.
No, exactly right. And I saw some suggestion that Man City are going to, like, you know, bring out a dossier of stuff that other clubs have done. And look, if other clubs have broken the rules, why shouldn't they be punished as well? It's the idea that nobody should ever get punished for something they do because they're rich enough to deal with it or to pay people or to make things go away or to, you know, find loopholes and all those kind of things. You know, we look at the money that comes into certain clubs and, you know, it can't be anything other than a breach of FFP. It just can't. I think at the end of it, if you are nominally interested in maintaining football as a competitive sport, and I say that as a sport rather than a medium of entertainment, which is driven by the demands of broadcasters and rights holders and sponsors and marketeers and you know, the rich owners who want to become richer by cornering the market. And by, you know, I think the Independent did a really good piece last week about how Miguel Delaney's piece was really, really good about, you know, the way that, you know, top flight football is becoming less and less competitive. You know, that's something that should concern us all. So if City have to pay a price to make things better, then tough shit on City. And if it happens to us and we were the ones who had broken the rules, then what can we do other than accept that and get on with it and maybe operate in a way which doesn't break the rules? I mean, the thing that might benefit us, James, is if the ban is upheld, fifth place becomes a Champions League place.
Well, indeed. Yeah. City fans should be delighted anyway. They hate the Champions League, don't they? Famously always booing the
anthem. Boo the anthem, yeah.
They've got what they want.
Yeah.
Yes, fifth is fascinating. It completely would alter the dynamic of the remainder of the Premier League season, I think, because as unlikely as top four has felt for a long time, somehow fifth seems, A, more attainable, and B, does it almost apply a degree of pressure to the Premier League that wouldn't otherwise be there?
Yeah, I think people were talking about the Premier League as kind of a done deal for us this season. It was like, we can use it to, you know, obviously keep momentum going and we could maybe experiment and play some young players and what have you. And the only realistic avenue that we had into the Champions League was by winning the Europa League. And now, look, there are 12 games to go. It does feel very much like getting ahead of ourselves, having won just once in the last 6 weeks or whatever it is. But, you know, that's the target. The target is to win games. And when you're just 6 points behind the fifth place team, why wouldn't you at least make that an ambition? Whether you can achieve it or not is a different thing. But why wouldn't you hold that carrot out there and fucking smash that donkey and go for it?
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it's definitely something to motivate the players and motivate the squad. I think it will still be difficult, I have to say. You know, it's not so much the six-point gap. I'm sure Arsenal could make up a six-point gap, but it's the number of teams between us and that six-point gap who we also need to fall by the wayside, you know, including, I don't know, Manchester United with a game in hand and a very competent Sheffield United side. So, yeah, look, it would be great, and I think you've got to go for it, haven't you? Having been handed that sort of lifeline, you've got to try. But I don't think it'll be easy.
No,
that's for sure.
I don't think it will. Let me see here. I had a question. Sorry, I got to find it here because it was an interesting question and I've lost it in a reboot. Let me see. Bum, bum, bum.
I feel like I should be filling here.
You could do. I mean, you could, like, improvise or whatever. But look, I've let's see. Where the fuck is it gone?
Think of the last place you saw it.
I saw it on Twitter. It was on Twitter, and I'm searching Twitter for the thing. It's basically about Mustafi.
Yeah.
Let's see. It should be in my mentions. This is terrible.
We might have to cut this out.
Here it is. I found it.
Oh, wow.
Yay. It's from Pete Sithlum. Pete Sithlum.
Sithlum?
Yeah, Pete Sithlum.
He's got no vowels in his name.
Got no vowels in his surname. Pete Sithlum. And he's at FC underscore Stockholm. So maybe Sithlum is something to do with Stockholm. Could be in Swedish or something. I don't know.
Sure.
Could be. I don't know. Maybe he's just called Sithlum. He says, goodly morning, gents. Quick question about Mustafi. I, for one, really liked his game yesterday. Cam on the ball and good in the air. Could it be we are giving him games to up his value before we sell him, or does Arteta really fancy him? Or maybe both?
It's a good question. I don't think Arteta would give him games to up his value now. You know, outside of a transfer window, I don't buy that, really. I think he'd be more focused on the result. I think he does like him. I think he likes a lot of what he brings. Am I convinced? No, because I know that this is what Mustafi does. He looks all right for a bit, and then something really bad happens.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am with it. I thought he was good yesterday.
He was good yesterday, yeah, really good. And he's really, I mean, one of the things, I think, because I've been so frustrated with him and sort of written him off so much that you forget where he's strong. And he is remarkably good in the air for a man of his stature. His spring is great, I think.
Yeah, he does make some big headers, that's for sure. He's brave, in fairness, in the box. We'll stick his head in.
I'm just waiting for the moment, you know?
Yeah, I am too. I mean, we had one a couple of games ago.
Yeah, against Chelsea.
Yeah. And, like, the elation of seeing Gabriel Martinelli leave Kante in the dust after he slipped and scoring that goal and then scoring a late equaliser definitely has people's perception of that match is very different.
Yes.
You know, than
Hector
it would
Bellerin
be
saved Mustafi's Arsenal career with
kinda,
that equaliser.
Kind of, you know. But, you know, Arteta's spoken about how he liked Mustafi's reaction to that and... I don't know. Yeah, he does seem to like him. I thought, you know, this would be a good indication of what Arteta was thinking about in terms of his, not necessarily his strongest side, but when it came to his defense, I was looking to see, would he bring Socrates back because he'd been a little bit injured or a little bit ill. And maybe going into the two-week break, he just wanted to rest him up again. But, you know, he stuck with Mustafi. That's a decision you can live and die by.
Sure.
You know, but for now, I think he's playing well enough to justify his place in the team. It's just, you know, it's always there, isn't it? It's always there in the back of your mind about what might happen. And that's based on, you know, 3.5 years. of watching Mustafi play for Arsenal. So I think, you know, credit him where it's due for the performances that he's put in, but I can't not be a little bit wary. That's all.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we'd be naive to not be wary at this point. You know, we have learned our lesson. We have been several times bitten and we're several times shy. So credit to Mustafi for a good performance yesterday, and I don't take that away from him at all. But I, you know, he feels like a time bomb still to me. But yeah, clearly Arteta likes what he brings, and I think it's what he does on the ball too. I think it's the ambition of his passing, even if it's not always as accurate as he might like. Ashley Gardner on Twitter asks, we talked about him a bit in part one, but he says, if Ceballos plays like he did yesterday for the remainder of the season, should we be reopening the discussion on whether he would make a worthwhile permanent signing in the summer?
Yes, if he plays like that between now and the end of the season in every game, we should definitely reconsider having a discussion about whether or not we should keep him.
Sure. Okay, great. Problem solved.
Yeah. But that's the thing, isn't it?
There are a lot of questions of, like, should we buy Ceballos now? And my reaction really is, well, let's wait and see. You know, this could be another Burnley and we might get nothing else for the next 2 months.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, there is an element of short-termism. Isn't it? Not quite right. But, you know, you see a guy do that and you go, well, if he could do that every week, we should definitely buy him. But it's about him doing it every week. And that's the thing with Ceballos. He had that one performance against Burnley, and then I'm not judging the rest of his season because it was part of the general malaise. But, you know, I liked what he did yesterday. I like the fact that he passes the ball with pace. He really whacks it at the person he wants to receive the ball, and that's important because it gives you just that little bit more time and it can open up an avenue for you for another pass, a first time pass. You know, he's not brilliant defensively, and I'm not sure against certain opposition he would be the right choice in that position. But yeah, it was a promising performance, and if he can back it up with more promising performances, maybe it's a discussion worth having. Arteta sounded very impressed afterwards, didn't he, about what Ceballos had done. I think that's a very another thing to point out, is that he had sounded pretty lukewarm on him when these rumours were going around about how he wanted to leave and wanted to, you know, to get away and, you know, change clubs for, you know, to be in the Euro 2020 thing. And look, having the ambition to be in the Spanish squad is great. We all understand that. But there were two things. There was an interview with Marca or El Mundo or one of those.
It was Marca, yeah.
Yeah. And Ceballos said, you know, leaving would have been the cowardly thing to do instead of getting your head down and working hard and fighting for a place. Paraphrasing. Mm-hmm. And Arteta has basically confirmed that. He said that Ceballos is a good example. He said, he changed the way he trains? Was that what he said?
Yeah, he said he's training now like an animal, was his phrase.
He completely changed his behavior, is what he said.
Yeah.
So those are not insignificant words. So, no. You know, if Arteta, if Ceballos can do that and convince Arteta he's worthy of a place in the team, then that's a positive thing as well. And again, maybe going back to the Guendouzi thing, you know, if Ceballos or if Arteta is open to a player changing his behavior, then, you know, it doesn't close the door on him. You know, so I think it's positive, but let's see what Ceballos does.
Yeah, and he's an example for Guendouzi now in terms of his response, but he's got to deliver it consistently. I really liked a lot of what he did in the game. I thought his presence helped Ozil as well because he can find him quicker and earlier. And
yes.
I think that's what Arteta's kind of been looking for. If you look at the central midfield, he had Torreira in there and he seemed to be, you know, to the eye, doing pretty well. But he was tempted enough to go with Guendouzi at Burnley, and I do think that was about swift, fast progression up the field. And I think that Ceballos, of the three, is probably the best distributor. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes on from here.
Is it Your question or my question? No, it's my question, isn't it?
It's yours, yeah.
Okay, we've got a couple of questions here along the same lines, which I definitely have, and I'm not going to go through all the stuff about... okay, now I found it. Here it is. Bruce Ridewell says, next season, would you A, keep Tierney and play Saka on the left wing, or B, sell Tierney and keep Saka at left back? Kieran Leonard, who's at Kieran Leonard 1, says, with the emergence of Saka at left back, does this spell the end for Tierney before he even gets going? Are there shades of the Debushi-Bellerin situation? And finally, John Batty, who's at Tech Batty, says, how worried are you about Saka's contract situation?
Ooh, plenty of questions there. I mean, the comparison of Debushi and Bellerin's actually quite an interesting one. Because I hadn't thought of that. You know, we signed Debushi to replace Sanya, and Bellerin came from nowhere. And, of course, Debushi got an injury. Was that a shoulder injury as well, funnily enough?
It was. It was when...
got pushed off the pitch by Arnautovic, wasn't it?
Yes, the pound shop Ibrahimovic.
Yeah. So I guess there are some parallels there. I mean, a lot depends on... The big difference between Debushi and Tierney is age. You know,
yeah.
Debushi was at an age where if he missed that much football, he was sort of out of his peak by the time he came back. Tierney is entering his peak, you know, and if he can get fit, I think he's a big prospect still. I suppose I'd be most worried if I was Sead Kolasinac, let's put it like that, of the three.
Mm.
I think given the salary that we're paying him, given... the fact that he represents an opportunity, a rare opportunity for us to turn a profit effectively on a player, and definitely in terms of the transfer fee, I think his spot is vulnerable. As for Saka's long-term future, I think a lot of it depends on Arteta's willingness to adopt this kind of adapted left-back role in the long term.
Mm.
You know, is it something he is doing because he needed to do it, because he didn't have any left-backs and it was a way of kind of protecting... hiding Saka's weaknesses and emphasising his strengths, and it's working, so he's sticking with it short term? Or is he prepared for it to be a long term feature of the team? I think that's what it comes down to, and I'm not sure, to be honest, with what the case is with that. What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, like, my gut tells me that going forward and looking into the future, a left side of Tierney at left back and Saka at left wing is very exciting. You know, he's done amazingly well at left back, but I do think where we've seen the best of him is in the final third, and that's where he's clearly really productive, really talented. Has got a tremendous amount of ability. He's got more assists than any player in the Arsenal team this season, and that includes Pepe, it includes Lacazette, it includes Mesut Ozil, of course. So, you know, I think. When you're looking at where he's strongest, the fact that he can do a great job at left back is really promising, but maybe you get more out of him if you play him further forward. Aubameyang, there may be question marks about his long-term future at Arsenal. We have to start thinking about what our long-term future is going to be. You know, we paid a lot of money for Tierney. Arteta was very complimentary about him as well last week. And I think if you look at it and think about how do you set up the left side of your team in the future, Tierney and Saka sounds very nice to me, along with Bellerin and Pepe on the right-hand side. You know, those are areas of the pitch which are kind of future-proofed with those players. So that's where I think, that's where my gut feeling tells me or how we'll deal with that situation.
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. I think, was it at Old Trafford where Saka created a goal with a piece of play that was proper kind of inside forward stuff, like a really neat little pass? Maybe it was Old Trafford. I forget. It was somewhere away from home and he did really well. But I think he can play on the wing. I just think he's doing so well in this adapted left-back role that I'm not quite willing to sort of write that off as a potential future for him. I think it could be. I think it really could be.
Yeah, it could be. It could be. Oh, can you hang on? Someone at the door.
Yeah.
One sec. I'm back.
That's good news. Yeah,
that was my neighbour. His battery is flattening in me to jumpstart his car. And I said, no, no. The people are waiting for a podcast. And I can't deal with your car.
Good of you. What about the contract? Any concerns for you about the contract 18 months ago?
Look, I suppose, just a little bit. You know, that sort of feeling where you go, oh, his breakthrough has been so remarkable that there are going to be teams all over the place looking at him and what he can do and his contractual situation and who will be offering him plenty, right?
Yeah. Look at Callum Hudson-Odoi when he broke through at Chelsea and was the subject of that interest from Bayern Munich. Yeah. I think this is a talent of that calibre who could attract a similar level of interest.
And I think we have to look at the contract situation in the context of the fact that he's only 18. He signed his first professional contract in September 2018, right? Mm. As a, what, then 16-year-old? Or 17? Do you have to be 17? You have to be 17, don't you? Maybe. So, you know, look, he was on a contract which was befitting of his stature at the club at the time. And now it's nowhere near worth, or he's getting nowhere near what he's worth to the team. You know, our chief creator this season, and he's on whatever it is, $3,000 a week, something like that. You know, so he absolutely deserves a new contract. He deserves it from the point of view of safeguarding his future, but because of what he's done on the pitch and the performances, you know, my natural, not natural pessimism, but that bit of pessimism you have about a situation like this where you go, ooh, who could be offering him and maybe he'll be lured away and what have you. I do think the fact that he's come through Hayland, the academy, with Joe Willock, with Eddie Nketiah, with Reece Nelson, you know, and with some of the other players that are, you know, there or thereabouts, I hope that will be the driver for him. You know, it would be a really key part. It's like, be part of this generation of young Arsenal players who can be part of our future for years and years. So pay him what he's worth and, you know, let's move on. I did read David Ornstein saying they're dealing with this as a sort of matter of urgency.
Yeah, meeting last week, according to David. So that bodes well. I mean, I think that the club would probably like to put... The tricky position is the club would probably like to put him on money equivalent with some of these other academy guys, you know, your Joe Willocks, your Smith Rowe's, stuff like that. But Saka will be looking at this now and saying, and his agent will certainly be saying, he's a first-team player who's making big contributions in the first team, and so he expects to be rewarded accordingly. And it will be... They'll ask for a massive jump, which maybe the club might be a bit reticent to do. Mm. I think you've just got to do it in this situation. You've got to bite the bullet because he has broken through. What would it cost to replace him, to buy a young talent of that ability?
Where do you get one?
Yeah, exactly. So he's a gift. You've got to keep him and you've got to pay the money. And I honestly think, you know, whatever we end up paying him on this new contract will be small change to what he eventually makes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
and that's so, look, I think a situation like this is probably the best problem a football club can have.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh no. Oh. How are we what are we going to do about our breakthrough academy talent?
This guy's come through and he's been absolutely brilliant. Oh, shit. Shit, now we're going to have to pay him more money. It's like this is what you want from an academy. You want these stars to break through and you've got to be prepared to give them what it takes when they do make that breakthrough. And he's done it this season and he deserves whatever he gets, in my opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. Couldn't really have done much more. This question came from Peter Host, who asks questions quite regularly on the show. Goodly morning, gents. I was flying in from Denmark yesterday, but missed the match because my flight was delayed because of the weather.
Mm.
Sorry, Peter. I have plenty of foreign fans, I think, missed the game. What's the worst Arsenal match you've missed over the years? And I obviously know mine straight away.
I guess it's probably different, you know, if you're going to matches week in, week out.
Well, mine actually was a match that I didn't go to. It was, of course, when we went to New York. I missed the vast majority, or certainly the good bit of Arsenal beating Chelsea, stuck in traffic from the airport.
That's right. I remember that. I remember that. Yeah. That was a good game to be at, or a good game to witness with all.
Impinge on the celebrations in any way. Yeah. I thoroughly enjoyed the day, but gutted to miss the goals.
I can't remember missing a game.
It's your job, isn't it?
Remember,
you know?
Yeah.
You make time for it.
I do have vague recollections of having flights for a game and the game being cancelled because of weather. But it's so long ago, I can't remember. So I've got no good answer to this question. I apologise.
No worries. It was selfish, really. I knew I had an answer.
Okay.
So I did it.
I know how it goes. All right. Let's do one to finish because we've been going a while. This one from Stephen Leachman. He says, after spotting him doing it during the goal celebrations, how would you stop David Luiz from tweaking your nose?
Well, I mean, was it you who tweeted saying I'm very much on Joe Willock's side here?
Yes. If I woke up, to people who didn't see it, there was a video doing the rounds of the players asleep on the team bus at various stages during the warm weather training, I think, or maybe even before that. But basically, they would be asleep and Luiz would come up to them and tweak their nose with his thumb and his index finger. What's the noise that he makes?
I don't know.
It's kind of like a... It's like a... Yeah! And everyone went, oh, what the fuck? And then Joe Willock went, oh, what the fuck? And then, tried to hit him.
I don't blame Joe Willock. I think that's reasonable. So I would probably try to hit him. It would be my solution. I mean, I don't know what else you can do. I could tell him, why would he not want to treat my nose? I was ill.
What if you coated your nose in a fiendish plan, right? So you coat your nose in a red hot chili.
I mean, that would hurt your nose though, Andrew.
Yeah, but what you would do...
But is it worth it?
Yeah, well, you could do, but you could get like a piece of latex and make a prosthetic... sort of outer cover for your nose.
Yeah.
So he'd be looking at your nose going, it's a bit bigger than I thought it was. A bit bigger than yesterday. Anyway, so he would like tweak your nose and go, and do his funny sound. And then at some point he would go to the bathroom. And did you ever chop chilies and put them in a dish and then go to the bathroom and forget that you'd chopped the chilies having not washed your hands and you get... A very painful experience,
Yeah.
So that's what I would do.
That's quite clever, actually. Mm. And I think it would be the least David Luiz deserves for interrupting everybody's sleep.
For sure. I mean, the other options are like putting tiny robotic scorpions up your nose and when he comes near them, just going...
Just hold them in your nose and release them at the crucial moment.
Exactly. When he pinches your nose and goes... You just go...
Out comes the scorpion.
Out come the robotic scorpions. Bang, bang. And then his hand swells to the size of a... Like Hellboy. He'd have a gigantic Hellboy hand for hours. That'd teach him.
That would teach him. Maybe we should... Do it to Bernd Leno as well. Might be useful for a goalkeeper.
Two clean sheets in a row for Bernd Leno. What the shit, man?
And a good save from that shot that deflected in the first half, I thought.
Yeah.
He did well there.
He did well. Okay, well, look, hopefully people have enjoyed this. It's been a very enjoyable podcast to take part in. Thank you very much to everyone for listening. As always, it's great to win, and hopefully we can win again on Thursday. I thought I had a question about Thursday as well, but I can't remember. I've lost.
Would you like to win? Would you like to win the match on Thursday as well?
Yeah. Should we win?
That's come from James from Gunnerblog.
Should we win on Thursday?
Should we win on Thursday?
I don't know,
Andrew. You know me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Don't know.
What do you think?
Yes.
You're going to go for yes.
I'm going to go for a yes on this one. I mean, I think the question was about whether or not you think he's going to rotate in a significant way, or, you know, will he try and pick, you know, because we've got Everton then on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm not expecting huge changes. I would think there's got to be a chance Torreira might come in central midfield.
Socrates
is a possibility, and I think Lacazette might be a possibility.
Mm-hmm. Martinelli
might be a possibility.
You know.
But I think he'll pick a team. I think he'll pick a strong, strong team. You know, I don't think it'll be, you know, Aubameyang's going to play. I think, you know, Ozil's going to play. Luiz is going to play. Maybe Martinez is going to play though. In goal.
Yeah, I think he will. You know, I think you've got to be protective of Bellerin also. So what we do at right back will be quite interesting because we won't have Cedric, but could we see a return for Ainsley Maitland-Niles? Some interesting decisions for Mikel Arteta to deal with. We will, of course, deal with them. Oh, are you around on Friday morning?
I think so.
Okay.
I think so. Let's chat about it after this podcast. Okay.
We won't promise. We won't promise.
Let's not promise because I don't want to let anybody down.
Okay. But either way, there'll be some kind of podcast on Friday morning. Anyway, we'll figure it out. We'll chat about it offline. Thanks as ever for listening, and we'll catch you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.